reflecting about what to explore this afternoon, the theme that kept coming back in my mind was some of the topics that have come up in the groups in the last few days. And in particular, the topic, various threads around the topic of wisdom. So I thought we could spend some time exploring some of those threads. Wisdom can be understood as a mental formation. One of those mental formations we were talking about last night, an arising process of mind that has a job description that tends to support the understanding of suffering and release the suffering. When I first heard about this word, wisdom, or insight, I thought that wisdom would arrive in one big bang or something, and I thought I was just supposed to sit there until it happened. And then, as I went to my practice meetings with my teachers, and they asked me questions, and I began to get that it was something that developed over time, and that that development was part of the way that developed was through how awareness, mindfulness met experience and was curious about it and interested in it. And at first it was kind of like, oh, that's going to be a long process. And then it just became more interesting. It's like, oh, this is interesting. This is the mind getting to see how the mind does what it does. I didn't even think that was like possible, but our minds can see into our minds. Our minds can understand what our minds are doing. Wisdom understands what our minds are doing. That capacity is available for us. It's a fantastic thing. And so wisdom is cultivated with the practice, developed, cultivated. And there's a pretty systematic process in a way that this happens by, a very natural process, a lawful process. The cultivation of wisdom follows a lawful unfolding. One of the descriptions or categorizations in the suttas of wisdom is that it's there are three kinds of wisdom. In the Pali, they are suttamayapanya, which is sutta. The word sutta means hearing or heard. And so the wisdom that develops with hearing, listening. The second is Chintamayapanya, which is a wisdom that develops with active reflection, thinking about kind of integrating or, you know, taking in what's heard and kind of evaluating, looking at it. Does it make sense here? And then the third is bhavana mayapanya. Bhavana meaning cultivation, the kind of wisdom that develops through practice, through cultivation, the wisdom that shows up with insight, with understanding. The wisdom that is referred to here is, there's lots of different kinds of wisdom, you know, the things that we can call wisdom. But the wisdom that is being pointed to is the wisdom around suffering and the end of suffering. So this is all what we've been exploring here, what the teachings of the Buddha point us to. Understand our experience through this reflection or question, what is suffering? What is the experience of suffering and how does it come to be? What is the experience of that release of suffering? Most of us need some guidance along these lines. We are fortunate that the Buddha was able to figure this out without guidance. He just, I think, kept asking the question, what is this suffering and how does it work? So the wisdom, the Sutta Mayapanya, the wisdom of hearing is, you know, taking in, you know, we are all fortunate, I said this the other day, we're all fortunate to have heard some of the teachings of the Buddha. We're fortunate to have been exposed to them. There are conditions by which that happens. Most of them we're not in charge of. We all have our own way that we found, that the Dharma found us, essentially. And so we all hear the Dharma. That's how it starts for us. The Buddha didn't have that piece. But we all have this exposure to the teachings. And that is kind of the, we could call it the field that we're sitting in together here, this field of the teachings, the field of the Dharma. Just allowing ourselves to spend these weeks letting this be our perspective without a lot of influence from other perspectives, from the news or families or other things. So we're really in a field of that Dharma wisdom. And with the hearing of that, I think of these three as kind of like one deepening after the other. We have to hear some teachings to begin to engage with them. And the next kind of level of engagement would be you hear something and for some, maybe just hearing it, it's like, well, that doesn't make sense. So, you know, I'm not going to go there. And, or For me, I did run into the Dharma. I did run into the teachings of mindfulness through a book by Thich Nhat Hanh when I was in my 20s, I think. And thought it sounded really interesting, but there wasn't much traction with knowing how to practice from what I read in the book. I would read the book and think, this sounds great. And then I would not think about it until I picked up the book again. And after some days of that, so I don't know how long it was, it's just like, well, I guess this stuff doesn't work. I didn't know how to engage. It didn't know how to shift it to that Chintamayapanya. It sounded good, but you know, the reflection didn't go deep enough, or there wasn't enough kind of sense of how to engage. And so it penetrated to some extent in that it sounded interesting, but there wasn't a way to kind of apply it through just what I was reading. I didn't understand how to apply it. And so the Chintamayapanya is I think it's a level of reflecting on what we've heard and beginning to process it to some extent. You know, does this make sense to me? And I think that some of the wisdom that's offered by the Buddha, I think a key piece of wisdom that's offered by the Buddha is this is not just meant to be listened to, it's meant to be engaged with. And so a key piece is how to engage, how to practice. That's a key piece of the wisdom. It's not just about hearing it, it's about engaging with it. So the Chintamayapanya, I think to some extent in my own practice, this Chintamayapanya was a reflecting on what I heard. And the second time I met the Dharma, about 15 years after that first book, there was more motivation, there was more interest, I think. My situation was such that it's like I'd hit bottom, so, nothing else to try here. And somehow I did manage to hear in the Dharma that I was reading that second round that there was something I could do. It was a simple instruction, just pay attention to what's happening. And notice what, you're stuck on. And for me, that was anger. So it's like, okay, notice your anger. And that, in terms of Chintamayapanya, that didn't make a lot of sense to me. I didn't understand how that would work. So there was a reflection of, okay, I don't get how this will work. But there was another bit of information that came in. Perhaps, it's another flavor of wisdom, which was that a friend of mine had been practicing the Dharma. And she said, trust me, this works. So this was another bit of wisdom that came in. And, just holding those two together, it's like, well, nothing else has worked. I might as well try this. So the Chintamayapanya kind of is that in between the hearing the information. To me, it's kind of like this place where it begins to land and resonate enough that we decide to actually engage, actually practice. And then this third kind of wisdom, the Bhavanamayapanya, the wisdom of cultivation, is what happens as we begin to engage, as we start to actually look at our minds. This is really the field of where we are. I think all three of these are circling around us in our field here. The the Sutta Mayapanya in the instructions and the reflections that are offered, the Dharma conversations. The Chintamayapanya in some ways in how we practice, because the Chintamayapanya, the use of reflection, the use of wisdom as reflection, this is a tool that we can use. And I've actually encouraged it, you know, the kind of like bringing in, if the mind doesn't have quite the capacity to hold the experience, sometimes a reminder of wisdom, just dropping in a wisdom reminder, well, this is impermanent, or this is nature. This is a use of Chintamayapanya too, in my understanding. It's not something we're directly experiencing in the moment, but it is wisdom either that we've had ourselves in the past. You know, in my own experience, I find sometimes the understandings I've had, sometimes they get expressed. It's like wisdom sometimes talks to us when we understand something clearly. Wisdom will the expression of it, like it might come up in a sentence or a statement in our mind. And for me, at one point, in seeing a particularly sticky pattern, the mind recognized that it was simply an arising thought that was being believed. And the expression of that, so that there was a freedom, there was a kind of a releasing. But the expression of it, the way the mind understood it, was this is just a thought coming up in the mind. There's nothing here. It's just a thought. It only has the reality that my mind is giving it. So those were the flavors of what the mind said to itself. What wisdom said, essentially wisdom expressed those in language. And that phrase, it's like for the next at least 3 or 4 days, that phrase was like a magic phrase. You know, it really just like was so close to the understanding that, you know, whenever there was something sticky, I could just remember, yeah, that's just another thought. When it would all fall apart. That, you know, that didn't have that potency for very long. That phrase didn't have that same level of potency for very long. But still, you know, even for quite a long time, the way that wisdom had expressed it to me was a powerful tool. And so, you know, there's ways that, for instance, my teachers expressed wisdom, like Saito Tejaniya said, you know, the phrase, this is nature. That one ended up being really useful for me when I was stuck on something, just reminding myself, this is nature, really helpful. And that was Sayadaw's phrase that ended up being very helpful for me. But sometimes the wisdom that we've learned, if wisdom expresses it to us in a particular language, that language can be particularly powerful for us in terms of reminding ourselves of what we've already learned, what we had learned in previous times. And so these wisdom reflections, we can borrow wisdom reflections from our teachers. And sometimes we borrow wisdom that we haven't actually experienced. You know, it's like complete trust that it's useful to hold or explore experience in that way. But then when we do have our own understanding, when that Bhavana Mayapanya begins to show up, when there is, and we don't always get an articulation of language with our understandings. definitely not always the case. We don't even know sometimes what we've understood. We just know that there's a release. We know that there's a kind of a, oh, something let go. So we don't always get this Dharma language coming up in our minds when we understand or see something. But if we do, those kind of phrases can be really supportive for us because that's how our own system has understood something. So those can be useful as a support for that Chintamaya Panya. When we find our mind not quite able to clearly see, and there's a little bit of wobbliness with being with something, sometimes those wisdom reflections can help create the container that lets us hang out there a little more. We may not see with that wisdom, that using those wisdom reflections, we may not see that wisdom directly in that moment, but it might have the effect of creating a little more space, a little more ease, a little more capacity to be with it. And then there are those moments where wisdom becomes stronger and actually begins to release suffering. And maybe in small ways, not necessarily, you know, not necessarily that big bang way, you know, the way I thought I was just going to have one major experience where my suffering would be forever gone. And it's much more gradual, you know, those images of the rotting rope, the hatchet, you know, chopping the wood. It's much more gradual. And yet there are kind of small ways that we can know wisdom is working. We can know that wisdom is growing. And being a mental formation, a wholesome mental formation, wisdom, a wholesome mental formation, the kind of nature of awareness of wholesome mental formations is that it strengthens them to be aware of them. And so wisdom is no exception. At one point, Sayadaw asked me to be curious about wisdom at work. How do you know wisdom is working? And I was like, I don't think I even know what that means. I do think probably there's some wisdom going when there's some ease, you know, when there's some sense of release, you know, the mind feeling pretty still or balanced. And so I just began kind of like, okay, feels pretty calm now, so wisdom must be working. I couldn't really articulate it. But it did make me curious about wisdom. It made me curious about exploring that as a process. It's one of those conditions that is both conditioned, arises based on conditions, and conditions our experience, both conditioned and conditioning. And becoming aware of it, aware of how it works, how it operates in the mind, is one of the ways that it strengthens. And so, you know, there's just some small things I began to see, you know, a little more clarity of what it means. You know, even something as simple as being curious about something challenging, maybe exploring a reactive pattern of mind and feel being caught in it, but then the curiosity gets a little stronger and it's like, oh, I can actually see this, and wow, that's kind of interesting. So there can be a shift from like being caught in something to having a sense of interest or curiosity or space around that experience. It's wisdom that does that, that creates that space that is connected to that curiosity and interest. And we can feel the shift, the shift there. You know, one of the kind of hallmarks of wisdom often is that there's a sense of a shift away from suffering. Maybe not completely, but there's a shift from being maybe caught to not caught. Maybe not fully released, but a shift. The wisdom does that work. We could also say that the job of wisdom is to really see those flavors of delusion clearly, understand, see through the human tendency to take things to be permanent, to take things to be reliable, to take things to be self. And so the wisdom may at times be recognizing the impermanent nature of experience. Maybe noticing the suffering nature of experience. I talked about this morning that not a mistake when we are recognizing that. This is suffering. You know, it's interesting, I said a few minutes ago that wisdom will tend to move us, or a hallmark might be that we are experiencing less suffering. In our early days of looking at dukkha, it might feel like we're feeling suffering more when we're actually aware of it, when wisdom's actually aware of it. You know, the shift from being caught in the delusion that aversion is going to make me happy somehow, or greed is going to make me happy. One of you described this today, actually. You know, it's like the feeling at first that somehow that greed, that desire was pleasant, but the desire was pleasant because the mind was thinking about what it was going to get in the future. And when there was really the clear seeing of the experience in the moment, the desire itself was felt as painful, was felt as suffering. And so, you know, when we're caught in the delusion of greed or caught in the delusion of aversion, we are often not seeing or feeling the suffering of those states themselves. And so wisdom helps us to see that. And yeah, that was what, you know, early on in my practice, the instruction I got, you know, notice your anger when it's happening. You know, it's like, well, how's that going to help? You know, when I was caught in the anger, I was kind of believing that the other person was going to be miserable. And yet I didn't notice I was miserable. So the wisdom helped me to see that I was miserable. So in a way, it revealed the suffering of the moment. And so sometimes it can feel like when wisdom is there, especially early on when we don't understand, that the actual seeing of the suffering actually begins to loosen its grip on us. That's a little bit of a deeper wisdom. when we begin to recognize. And it actually, you know, in my own early days of practice, looking at that anger, it didn't take long before I understood how being mindful, being with the anger, was way better than being caught by it. But it wasn't immediately obvious. So wisdom was working there, helping the mind to understand this is dukkha. And then over a few weeks, it became clear, oh yeah, way better to see this now before it like takes off into its rage. So the understanding of the value of that seeing took a little while. Lots of different ways that we see wisdom working. You know, seeing impermanent experience sometimes clearly, something coming up and passing away, sometimes more just seeing, you know, it's kind of some of the pieces I talked about this morning, just seeing a kind of a flow of changing experience. Sometimes seeing the ending of things. We also see the conditioned nature of experience. Sometimes wisdom will see the conditioned nature of experience. And all of these wisdoms, all of the ways of seeing, their function, the way they act, and their purpose is to help the mind understand the ways in which it gets caught. And so the seeing of the conditionality, and some of you have described this too, you know, the seeing of how one thing arises, and then there's the next thing, and the next thing, and then you're leaping on it, you're craving it. Hearing a sound and then thinking a thought and then wanting that thing. And seeing in that process, you know, the mind seeing all of that, there's the understanding of the unfolding of that not as something I'm doing. And so the recognition of that's not me, that's not me doing that. So the not self understanding there, that's wisdom pointing that out. And partly, you know, the part of the way that is freeing or is helping to release dukkha. And first of all, when we don't see those patterns, as the Buddha pointed to, you know, whatever one frequently ponders becomes the inclination of the mind. When wisdom doesn't see these patterns, we just continue believing that grasping and craving is going to make us happy. But the seeing of it and seeing that it's just arising, seeing that the mind is making it up, seeing that it's not me doing it, all of that, the mind begins to let it go. Again, because that kind of movement, our organism wants to move in the direction of well-being. And wisdom supports that movement in the direction of well-being. So lots of different flavors of wisdom at work. Sometimes it's immediate and clear, a moment of seeing a wanting and a craving, and the very seeing of it, it falls apart. the feeling of release, sometimes another flavor that helps us to recognize wisdom at work. Sometimes we just feel a falling apart. We just feel a sense of release, but there's nothing clear. We don't know what's been released. That's been interesting in my experience. Like I'm sitting there and it feels like it's pretty calm and clear. And then something lets go. Like, wow, I didn't know there was a holding there. I don't know what let go. I don't know what I was holding on to, but something let go. So we don't always, as I said a little while ago, we don't always get to see. Wisdom doesn't always tell us what it's doing. And so sometimes the experience with wisdom is just recognizing the relief or the release of having let go of something, even if we don't know what it was. We don't have to figure it out. You know, thank goodness, that's not our job. In that moment, all we need to do is notice, this is what it feels like to have let go. So, you know, the wisdom is pointing out, this is the feeling of release, maybe there. This is the feeling of letting go. And sometimes it's really clear how, or really clear that, you know, it's an intention arising in the mind towards a particular suffering mind state, and the mind understands in that moment, that way lies suffering, and yeah, let's not go there. All just seen as wisdom doing its job. And very clearly understanding, you know, a clear seeing of what was let go of there was the intention towards that mind state. And the understanding that let it go was that that mind state was going to create suffering. Sometimes it's that clear, but not always. So I think we sometimes have the idea, or, you know, we have a tendency to think we have to know what wisdom is doing, or we have to be able to express it or articulate it, and we don't. That's another level of trust, in a way. Just, it comes back to just noticing what's happening. Whether wisdom is operating or whether a hindrance is operating. When wisdom is operating, what is it? What is the experience now? It feels like a release. There's an understanding and a delight that follows from a clear seeing. It's so simple. So wisdom grows slowly, and sometimes it's, you know, just these little shifts or seeing something with a little more ease, a little more space, a little more capacity to be with something. Sometimes we see something fall away, see a habit or pattern let go. Sometimes the wisdom is very strong. There are moments, there are times in practice where we're seeing something very clearly. There's a clear sense of the mind in a space of balance. It's another flavor, perhaps, of wisdom, where the mind is in a space of balance and things are coming and going. We might recognize that that what's coming and going are things that I would have been reactive to 5 years ago. And so we almost know in retrospect that wisdom is operating because the mind is not caught up in these things that are happening. And so those spaces sometimes, you know, the space of just like, yeah, open, easeful, just seeing conditions coming and going, clear seeing of the conditioned nature of experience, maybe clear seeing of impermanence. And the nature of our minds is often to have a relationship with the experience of strong wisdom. It feels good. It feels good to see clearly. There's delight. There's joy. There's understanding, and our minds will naturally cling to that. So, you know, wisdom is not with, you know, the understandings that we have. Our minds will cling. Our minds will cling to what's pleasant. And so there's maybe some flavors of relationships to be curious about, to be aware of that might happen. And I think the one of kind of like, oh, I figured it out, or, you know, ooh, that's what I'm supposed to be doing, or, you know, the kind of we land in a place of clear seeing in the mind immediately, like, oh, that's it. And so it creates a thing out of it. It like creates a solidity out of it. Thinks that's what I'm supposed to go for. Starts to try to find it again. And so sometimes there's that, just kind of recognize if there's a kind of a, ooh, that's it. And it's going to happen. It's human. It's human for that to happen. Now there's that kind of solidifying or making a thing out of it, trying to find it again. That's one flavor that sometimes happens with a clear seeing. Another flavor that another relationship that can sometimes happen is, you know, maybe sometimes the clear seeing is a different flavor of clear seeing of just how impermanent things are, falling away. And there can be a kind of a, at times there can be a kind of an ease and like, well, yeah, I understand this. There's nothing to cling to. But a deep tendency, and I've seen this, you know, as the mind moves into, shifts into that space of really understanding, nowhere to land, this is not worth clinging to. This is not worth clinging to. And there's actually a beautiful sense of ease and peace and like, yeah, I understand, not worth clinging to. But then some deep, deep habit and says, okay, well, that wasn't worth clinging to, but there must be something that will make me happy. There must be something I can hold on to that will make me happy. Such a deep habit. And so for me, that experience is kind of one of searching. Trying to find something. What is it? Where can I find it? And that's another relationship sometimes that, like, yep, not worth clinging to. And then the mind attributing that not worth clinging to, this is not worth clinging to, but there must be something worth clinging to. Let me find it. There's got to be something out there I can land on and be stable on and find that space. So that searching, you know, looking for something. There's some other flavors of opening to seeing through delusion, you know, seeing our patterns, seeing our habits, are just not what they think they are. You know, really, it is like, you know, aversion thinks it's helping us by getting rid of what we don't want, and greed thinks it's helping us by getting what we want, and so the habits and patterns are strategies of life, are strategies of who we are, our selfing strategies. You know, all of them have developed through our lives. Thinking they're helping us out. You know, they're strategies that have been perhaps useful at some point in our lives. And when we start to see through them, you know, it's like that strategy, that thing, that way that I've engaged, you know, oh, I actually, it's not helpful. We can really kind of deeply recognize this is not helpful. That's wisdom. You know, it's wisdom helping us to recognize that. It's like the bubble of our strategy, that this strategy is what's going to make me happy. This strategy is going to help me be fine in life. And we see that strategy is just about cultivating greed and aversion and delusion. And we feel into it, you know, yeah, that's not a good way. Sometimes there's a sense of seeing that that's not a good way, but there's not quite a clear understanding of what's going to be on the other side if I let that go. You know, what am I if I let that go? How am I going to be if I let that go and don't have much choice to let it go because wisdom is saying, yeah, that's suffering. And so there's a kind of a feeling sometimes, feeling bereft, a feeling of, someone expressed it the other day, as homesick. You know, it's like, those senses of self, those strategies, you know, they may not be pleasant, but they're familiar. It's like, that's our home. And, you know, no matter how, you know, messy it is, it's home. And I can't go back there anymore. It's just, it's too messy. It's the experience of that is now too much suffering. And so there's a kind of a feeling of loss in relationship to that seeing clearly sometimes. That's okay. You know, actually the way the practice deepens is by, well, noticing, you know, being curious about and watching, you know, the learning that's happening, the wisdom itself. And then very deeply, you know, quite often, when our mind's open to truth, when our mind's open to wisdom, some part of us might have a sense of, Oh, that makes sense. You know, there's an understanding there. But another part of us is like, no, that can't be right. It cannot be that there is nothing that's reliable. Just no. And so the seeing the truth, part of us really appreciates it. And the clinging goes so deep. The clinging is so deeply in there. The old deep clinging just says no. And that, you know, that expression, that resistance might be felt as homesickness, might be felt as searching, that kind of like, well, there's gotta be something. Just a denial, can't be that way, feeling of resistance. All of these can be our relationship to seeing the truth. And the practice deepens, because part of us understands that truth is truth, and we might want to repress or try to push aside those relationships. You know, I know, you know, it's not worth searching. You know, you shouldn't do that. Stop searching. That is just more aversion. And so there was one point in my practice where there was a lot of this going on. You know, there would be this real release of understanding of, yeah, nothing to cling to and nowhere to land. And the mind would just be like in this space of understanding that. And then this like little no would just come up and it would gotta be something. And I would just watch the mind do this. I'd watch the mind search and search and search. And just at some point, it's just like, okay, I just kind of got this very tender feeling for this searching thing, you know, that was going on. It's like, okay, I'll hang out with you while you search, you know. You're not going to find anything, but I'll be here with you. That's the kind of way that we have to approach these relationships. They often don't feel good. They are often suffering, these relationships to truth, to seeing truth. Now, there are times when seeing truth does feel delightful and, you know, so it's those are easier to work with. And yet, you know, useful to notice them too, because, you know, in other situations, I remember at one time seeing into a truth, seeing into a situation that's like, oh, that's just conditioned. And the very, you know, the seeing into it is like, oh, I figured it out. I'll never experience that again. And then, you know, being shocked like 2 days later when it's back full force. Oh, I guess I didn't figure it out. So, you know, there can be delight, there can be joy that arises with the seeing of it. And then we can get attached to that and think it means something. All of that as well, other relationships. So it's just, you know, just seeing these relationships. The recognizing their relationship to truth, whatever it is, whether it's delight, joy, bliss, see something really clearly bliss, whether it's searching or homesickness or a feeling of deep vulnerability, a feeling sometimes even of fear, nowhere to land. Nothing to hold on to. How am I going to survive? You know, so these relationships, that opening to those relationships with that kind of friendly, okay, yep, that's here too. That's how the practice deepens. Because those relationships are like the deeper. It's like the wisdom kind of penetrates, and I'm coming from top to bottom, right? I mean, just penetrates our mind, penetrates our heart, penetrates our guts in a way, and the the deepening of that, you know, the wisdom allows us to see certain things, and then it's the deeper levels that resist. So maybe our consciously we're on board for this, but somewhere deep in our system, deep in our old conditioning, there's that no coming out. No, this is not right. This is not the way it's supposed to be. And so the seeing of those, as the wisdom deepens, it begins to kind of tease back the layers, the deeper subconscious layers of how the mind deeply holds on to thinking things are permanent, reliable, and self. And so as the wisdom deepens, those relationships are revealing the deeper clinging, you know, deeper layers of clinging, deeper layers of holding, deeper layers of belief. And so seeing those, like wisdom is pointing out, as it's deepening, wisdom is pointing out the seeing of that. Those relationships are pointing out where there's still resistance, still clinging. The relationships are not a problem. They are simply revealing what still needs to be seen. So maybe that's enough. Let's just sit for a moment.